The Between Maid by Montague Summers. Montague Summers, editor of the landmark anthology The Supernatural Omnibus, issued in 1931, had a lifelong interest in the occult, witchcraft, vampires, and ghosts. Skeptics have mockingly asked, "And why do apparitions never appear during the daytime?" The answer is, they do. I have known many instances of apparitions seen in full daylight, and in some sense, they can be more alarming than the dim midnight specter. Perhaps most extraordinary and the most undisputable of all was the case of number 15 Redcliffe Road, Clifton Down, Bristol. In the good old days, houses were by no means difficult to get. No matter what you wanted, whether it were a cottage or a mansion, within a very few weeks you might be sure of finding it, which sounds like a fairy tale. When after the death in India of her husband, Colonel Conroy, Mrs. Conroy returned to England with her three daughters and decided to settle in Clifton, where her family had lived while she was a girl, a month had not passed before she secured a long lease of number 15 Redcliffe Road, Clifton Down. The agents had been enthusiastic, and the house in question proved all that was claimed for it. Standing well back from the road, it was situated in one of the best and quietest parts of Clifton, and the rent asked was remarkably reasonable for such a favorite district. In fact, it was so reasonable that Mrs. Conroy insisted upon the premises being thoroughly vetted before she took possession. But not a fault was to be found. Even Johnson, Mrs. Conroy's maid, expressed herself as perfectly satisfied with their quarters. The furniture was soon got out of store, and the move was accomplished quickly and easily, as moves were accomplished in those happy days. The Conroys settled very comfortably in their new home. The only trifling difficulty was that the housemaid could not take up her post as soon as they wished. "It would be nearly a month before she could come," lamented Mrs. Conroy, who dwelt incessantly upon the necessity for engaging a temporary. Miss Conroy and her two sisters, Miss Jessie and Miss Annie, did not see the need for anything of the sort. But Mrs. Conroy shook her head. "It will be just like Mother to go and get some daily girl from the registry office without telling us, or saying a word to anyone," Miss Jessie warned them. Accordingly, Miss Conroy was not so much surprised as annoyed when, on returning home one day about noon, she passed on the stairs a young girl in a pink print dress who was most busily engaged with a brush and pan, sweeping away as if for dear life. Miss Conroy only gave her a glance as she passed, but somehow she formed a most unfavorable impression. The new maid was distinctly untidy and dowdy, not to say sluttish. Her cap was soiled and all awry, and Miss Conroy felt searching almost like a shudder of disgust, and hurried up to her room. "Whatever can Mother be thinking of," she said as she unpinned her hat, "to engage a slattern like that? She's only fit for a third-rate lodging house. What will anyone say if she happens to open the door to them should Johnson be upstairs? She really is a most horrible, untidy Cinderella to be about a place. Round-shouldered, too. Practically humpbacked, poor thing. And such a white, unhealthy face. Enough to give one the creeps." The next day, Miss Annie caught sight of the new maid, who, upon seeing her, slithered away downstairs, giving a hideous grin over her shoulder as she closed the door behind her. "Really, I believe that girl Mama's got is half-witted," said Miss Annie rather crossly to her elder sister. "A pasty-faced creature grimacing like a Cheshire cat. She's not all there, I'm convinced." One morning, about 11:30, when the Conroys had been in their new house a week or so, I took the privilege of an old and intimate friend to pay an informal call, to wish them a pleasant settling in. My good friend Johnson answered the door and greeted me with her usual frank and ample smile. "Well, Johnson," I said, "and how are you all getting on? I only came to ask if there's anything we can do for you. I am not going to intrude." Oh, do come in for a minute, sir, she answered. The young ladies are out, but the mistress is in the morning room, and she will be delighted to see you. You know how fond she is of a bit of a chat in the morning. If you are sure, I began, and then stopped short. For just behind the prim and precise Johnson, so close indeed as to be peering over her shoulder, I saw a most repulsive-looking and disheveled tweeny maid, the sort of girl I could not have supposed Mrs. Conroy would have allowed in her house for a moment. A dirty pink frock, a smudged and smutted apron, long a stranger to the laundry, a grimy cap trolloping over a tangle of uncombed hair, all looked singularly out of place at the front door of that spick-and-span house, close beside a maid who might just have stepped out of a bandbox. The girl gave a sort of ugly grin at my obvious amazement, and in a moment had slipped away through the red baize doors at the back of the hall. I caught a look of surprise on Johnson's face, and made haste to answer, "Why, of course, if you're sure, I shan't be disturbing Mrs. Conroy." That lady greeted me warmly, only too glad to secure a listener when she had so much to say. In fact, the conversation was in the nature of a monologue dealing with the numberless perils and adventures of a move. On the following Sunday, after the midday dinner, Mrs. Conroy and her two younger daughters drove out to pass the rest of the day with some cousins who lived on the other side of Clifton Suspension Bridge in Lee Woods. The cook and Johnson were given the afternoon off from tea time, and Miss Conroy, seeing that the evening was remarkably warm and fine, it was early September, decided to go to church. She was on her way downstairs to get some hot water to wash before going out, but when she reached the hall, she heard somebody bustling about pretty briskly in the basement. Supposing that either the cook or Johnson had got back, she called out, "Oh, Johnson, would you bring me up a can of hot water, please? I am going to church." She waited 5 or 6 minutes, and then thinking that she had not been heard, for the noise of somebody moving to and fro was still quite distinct, she went down to the basement herself to fetch the water. The kitchen door was half open, and when she pushed it wide, to her astonishment, she saw her back turned towards her and apparently busy at the range, the girl in the pink print dress. "What on earth are you doing here?" she inquired in a loud, indignant voice. The girl swung around with a horribly impudent leer on her drawn white face, and without a word of explanation or apology, scuttled off into the adjoining scullery, a room from which there was no exit. Thoroughly incensed, Miss Conroy, thinking, "Ah, I've caught you now," followed. What was her amazement when she found that the scullery was absolutely empty? A great wave of nausea seemed to surge up over her, and she told me. I simply turned tail and ran upstairs. When she reached the landing, she paused to recover her breath, but to her absolute horror, she saw grinning and mowing from outside the house, 30 feet from the ground, the face, white and loathsome as the belly of a fat, bloated slug, of the between maid, whom she had left in the kitchen a minute ago. "How I got out of the house, I don't know," she used to say. She managed to reach the next door and pulled the bell violently. They found her in a dead faint in the porch. An illness followed, and it took several months at Brighton before she really recovered. As may be supposed, number 15 Redcliffe Road was promptly vacated by the Conroys, who were fortunate enough to find in a short time a house which was untroubled and clean. Years afterwards, Miss Conroy often said, "Would you believe that the sight of an ordinary maid in a pink print frock, even in the middle of the morning, will give me quite a start still?" Although it had all been most carefully hushed up, and it proved exceedingly difficult to get anyone to say anything. Some very odd facts came to light concerning number 15, Redcliffe Road. 50 or more years before, there lived in the house an old woman who was reputed to be immensely wealthy, although she existed like a beggar. And when she was seen, she was clothed in a gown little better than rags. She further bore a very evil reputation. There was only one maid in the house, a half-witted creature, a hunchback drab, always dressed in the cheapest pink print frock. Some whispered that she was the beldame's natural daughter. Be that as it may, it was known that the old harridan starved and beat her, and used her with fiendish cruelty. In the end, the wretched girl drowned herself in a large reservoir at the bottom of the garden. Fearful stories were told of the woman's deathbed. After Holy Communion had been administered, it was found, when she was dead, that she had vomited out the sacred elements at the foot of the bed. Rumors had it how, on that very day, dark elusive shapes and shadows had been half seen in the passages and on the stairs. That the family who took 15 Redcliffe Road when the Conroys had broken their lease did not stay a full month, I personally know, whilst the tenants who followed left most abruptly within even a shorter time. This sort of thing could not be kept quiet. Ugly stories spread, and it was impossible to contradict them. Nobody would look at the house. The last I heard of it was that it had been taken by a large removal firm as a furniture depository. There was some years ago, but certain I am that even today remains empty, save for the one occupant, the between maid.